of the women is suing. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News Radio.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. As you know, on our Wednesday program, it's our Worldview Wednesday segment of the program. And so today, we're going to zero in on the issue of the role of good government. That's the theme of the broadcast today. And we've got a lot on our plate. First up, I'm going to play for you on the program today an interview that I just did just an hour or so ago with former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich. And during that interview, we had very limited time, 10 to 15 minutes at the most. And I asked Speaker Gingrich to compare and contrast the conservative government that he supports with the libertarian government proposed by Ron Paul. And the reason I did that is I've heard already some of the distinctions between Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney, and even to a lesser extent, the distinctions between Newt Gingrich and Senator Santorum and so forth. And so I hadn't really heard Newt Gingrich talk about the fundamental differences between these two views, the conservative government view and the libertarian government view of Ron Paul. Also, I thought in light of the debate that took place Monday night, if you got a chance to watch that, there was some exchange between those two. And I specifically remember that Speaker Gingrich had spoken about the fact that after Ron Paul had answered a question related to foreign policy, Speaker Gingrich specifically said that that view was, quote, irrational, unquote. And so I asked him to explain those comments, explain the difference between these two things. Towards the end of the interview, I asked him about the judicial tyranny as well, and he'll respond to that. So we're going to listen to that. That's about 15, 20 minutes or so at the most. And then right behind that, we'll be joined by Tony Perkins from the Family Research Council. Tony, we want to ask him about that recent meeting of evangelical leaders in Texas and get his take on that and what is the outcome from that. Then we'll be joined for a few moments by Jennifer Mason. Jennifer is with the Personhood USA organization. They have an event here in Greenville tonight over at the Hilton, so we wanted to get some perspective from her. And then finally on the program today, we'll be speaking with Lee Jones, and Lee is with World on Campus. She's the editor of the World on Campus website, and we'll be talking to her about some related news items. So up first is this discussion with Newt Gingrich. Let me say this right at the very beginning. I think that the statements that are made very often by Ron Paul are good statements. I think that when he talks about limiting government, when he talks about that we're getting too aggressive in some of these wars and intervening in just all kinds of situations around the globe, I say amen to those things, cutting the spending and balancing the budget and all of these things. I say amen. The problem is the devil is in the details. What is actually going to be done in order to accomplish that is where I have the difficulty. And so that's why I'm asking this question of Speaker Gingrich. Here we go with that interview first. Speaker Gingrich has now joined us via the telephone. Speaker, welcome to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Well, it's a great honor to be with you, and I'm a great admirer of the work you've done in the Greenville area, so I'm really thrilled to have this chance to share with you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that comment. I wish we had time to go through all of the other candidates that you're running against here in the state of South Carolina with the primary just a few days away. But I wanted to, in the time that we have, just zero in on one candidate who has seen his messages been somewhat persuasive, especially with young people, young evangelicals even. And that candidate that I'm referring to is Ron Paul. During the most recent debate here in South Carolina, you had a brief exchange with Ron Paul, specifically about his foreign policy. But after hearing some of the views and the boos from the audience, by the way, of his foreign policy related issues, you responded that his views were irrational. And I wanted to give you the opportunity here today to articulate the fundamental differences between Ron Paul's libertarian views of government, both foreign and domestic, and the conservative views that you espouse and embrace. And so if you would, please, tell us in your view, what is the fundamental differences between those two views of government?
Well, let me say, first of all, that I do think that when Ron Paul criticizes the Federal Reserve, and when he talks about monetary policy and the need for a sound dollar, that there's actually a lot of, that part of his program is actually interesting and important, and he's doing the country a service. The two places I really disagree with him are legalization of drugs and his attitude about Israel and about Iran. Let me take them separately.
Mm-hmm.
In the essence, a great deal of Ron Paul's youth support is people who want to legalize drugs. And I think that would be a disaster. We've been endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, but that means we have to be citizens. And I think somebody who's a cocaine addict or a heroin addict or a methamphetamine addict really has lost the ability to be a true citizen because they've become dependent, and not only they can't take care of themselves, they can't earn a living. And so I just deeply disagree with this idea that you could safely legalize drugs, and I think it's a place where Congressman Ron Paul is just plain wrong. But where he's dangerous is the way he thinks about the problem of terrorism, of radical Islam, of the Iranian effort to get a nuclear weapon, and of the survival of Israel. I take the Iranians very, very seriously, and I believe that if they get nuclear weapons, they'll use them. And the test I give audiences is very simple. If somebody's prepared to put a bomb on their body, walk into a restaurant, and blow it up in order to kill you, why would you think that they would have any hesitation to use a nuclear weapon to kill a lot of us? And I think that there's a grave danger. Ahmadinejad, the dictator of Iran, comes from a particular sect of Islam which believes that there's a 12th imam who is hiding in a well near the city of Qom, and that given enough bloodshed, he will come back, and in effect, we will have Armageddon, and we will enter the Promised Land. Now, that's pretty dangerous, because it's pretty easy to imagine how Ahmadinejad could end up deciding that launching a nuclear war was actually a positive thing, because it would accelerate the return of the 12th imam. In addition, Ahmadinejad has said publicly he wants to erase Israel from the face of the earth. And so you have a very serious, very real challenge about what would happen if they had nuclear weapons. And remember, they don't have to deliver them by missile. They can put them on a boat. They can put them in a truck. These are just bombs. They can be delivered in lots of different ways. So I am very determined that Iran not get a nuclear weapon. And I think that Congressman Paul is wrong both on his indifference to the Iranian nuclear weapon program, his lack of support for Israel. I mean, he said pretty clearly, if Israel disappears, that's okay. It's not a big deal. Well, I don't agree with that. I think we have both a moral and historic and a practical reason to support the survival of Israel. This was the Promised Land. Jerusalem is the city of David. Anybody who knows the Bible knows that the references to Israel are all historic and all biblical, and I think that we have an obligation to be a firm ally of the state of Israel. So those are the really big differences between Ron Paul and me.
Concerning Israel, he has tried to somewhat turn this on its head and say that our support for Israel is actually making Israel dependent upon us, that basically they're a puppet of the United States, this type of thinking. What would your response to that be?
Well, my response would be that he's always willing to attack America's allies, and he's willing to attack America's motives. You know, he did the same thing about killing bin Laden. He compared bin Laden, who was in charge of killing 3,100 Americans, with a Chinese dissident, and said, gee, what if a Chinese dissident came to the U.S.? Well, there is no comparison between a peaceful Chinese dissident and a terrorist who went out of his way to kill 3,100 people. In some ways, Ron Paul blames the United States for 9/11. He says it's our fault, it's our policies. Well, I don't accept that. I think the people who killed Americans on 9/11 are terrorists and should be treated as terrorists. Similarly, I think he is absolutely indifferent to Israel's survival, and I believe that Israel is our best ally in the region. It is, if we're prepared to allow these people to wipe out the Jewish population of Israel and to cleanse Israel, and Hamas' example is very clear. The leader of Hamas said in the New York Times interview, not a single Jew will remain. Hmm. Well, I don't want to live on a planet where we do nothing and we end up having to be neighbors with people who are that vicious and that evil in their own right. And that's where I just profoundly disagree with Ron Paul. I think everyone who understands the Bible has some commitment to the survival of Israel as a legitimate place with over 3,000 years of history behind it.
There seems to be this little bit of a strain of a self-hating American view of the Americans as being warmongering, bloodthirsty tyrants that are waiting to swoop down in an unsuspecting country or something in some of his views. Is that one of the reasons that you think that many liberals are flocking to his campaign as well and seeing in him maybe those that have even been disappointed that Barack Obama didn't go far enough, that maybe Ron Paul could continue at least that portion of the agenda?
Well, I think it was Brett Baer, but one of the commentators of the night in the Fox debate in Myrtle Beach said, you know, you realize, Congressman Paul, you are well to the left of Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's right. I think in some ways Ron Paul has picked up the anti-American, self-hating attitude of the hard left. And his language says that. And, of course, his newsletters were even worse. Nobody has actually taken seriously looking at his 20 years of newsletters, which have many racist and anti-Semitic things in them, which he claims he didn't actually write. But, in fact, National Journal says he made $900,000 in 1 year off the newsletters. And so, and if it goes out over your name for 20 years, you have to have some responsibility. I write a weekly newsletter that goes out of Gingrich Productions, and I personally make sure that it says what I want it to say, that I believe in it, and that it's the message I want to send. And I think your point about this kind of this sense of self-hatred for America is part of this language. I mean, you know, he says we're breaking the law because we killed bin Laden. That's baloney. Mm. Bin Laden was an enemy combatant in an enemy battlefield, and we had every right to kill him after he killed 3,100 Americans.
Mm. On a domestic front here, I just have two more questions. One was on the domestic front that we talked about, the legalization of drugs and prostitution and these types of things that's being proposed by Ron Paul. Is this a fundamental different view of the role of government? We look at, as evangelicals, the role of government to be restraining evil and encouraging good, but he seems to think that this idea of encouraging good is anathema to the role of government. What do you say?
Well, look, none of the founding fathers would have agreed with him about that. The founding fathers believed that only a virtuous nation could remain free. In the Northwest Ordinance of 1787, which is the document which helps organize Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, and Wisconsin, they write, religion, morality, and knowledge being important. It is vital that we have schools. Now notice the order. Religion, morality, and knowledge. And in fact, virtually all the founding fathers thought the Bible was the best textbook for learning how to read, because in the act of learning how to read, you would learn so much about morality and about God. So it's the exact opposite of this modern model. Founding fathers believed that a society had to encourage good and had to discourage evil, and that was a function of a healthy culture. And only in the last 50 years have we had this radical vision that every generation is going to reinvent wisdom on their own. I don't think that's how the world works. I think all of us can learn from Moses. All of us can learn from Jesus. All of us can learn from St. Paul. And to try to reinvent all that, I think, is just utterly a denial of human nature.
Hmm. One final question away from the subject of Ron Paul, but a subject that I think I've only heard you really address in the couple times I've heard you speak publicly. You spoke about an issue of great concern to evangelicals across the country as well, and that's the subject of judicial tyranny, this growing power and impact of unelected, out-of-control judges. What specifically will you do as president to reduce and to restrain their influence in this country?
Well, this is a topic that I'm very proud of the work that Vince Haley and I have done. We have a paper at newt.org, myfirstname.org. You can go there and you'll see a paper on rebalancing the judiciary. Vince and I have been working on it since 2002. We got intrigued because of the Ninth Circuit Court's decision that one nation under God in the Pledge of Allegiance was unconstitutional. I thought that was such an anti-American decision that I went out and wrote a book called Rediscovering God in America. I made a movie out of Rediscovering God in America. And I've written about it since in a more sophisticated way in a book called A Nation Like No Other. And this paper is a 54-page paper that outlines that there is no such thing as judicial supremacy. The judiciary branch is one of three branches of government. They are co-equal, and in fact, the founding fathers thought the judiciary would be the weakest of the three. And I lay out the case for taming the judiciary, bringing it back into balance, getting rid of judges who are anti-American and who are religious bigots. And I think folks will find it very interesting to read. We clearly have the right as a free people to protect ourselves from anti-religious bigots trying to dictate from the bench. And I will, as president, lead the effort to protect Judaism and Christianity and to block those efforts which would drive our core religious beliefs out of public sight.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I want to thank you very much for the time that you've taken away from your very busy schedule to join us today on the Knowing the Truth radio program. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. And again, I really admire the ministry you've undertaken, and I'm delighted to have this chance to do the show with you.
Well, there you have it, folks. That was the interview that I did just earlier this morning, just really an hour or so ago with Speaker Gingrich. Speaker Gingrich is in our area, of course, as well as some of the other candidates. And I wanted to get his view specifically there to compare and contrast some of the things that we're hearing about a conservative government. What do we mean by that when we say that as Christians, when we even talk about being Christian conservatives? What do we mean by that? And then on the other side of it, what are the views that are espoused by a more libertarian position, a more libertarian government proposed by Ron Paul? So we were looking at those two items, and I thought that it would be interesting for you to hear the speaker compare and contrast a couple of those items. Next up on the list is going to be Tony Perkins from the Family Research Council. Tony is was just recently involved in that meeting of at least 150 evangelical leaders that were together in Texas. And part of the reason that they were coming together, at least as far as some of the news clips that I saw concerning it, revolved around the issue that right now the evangelicals have gotten their support behind a number of candidates. And I think this was an effort to try to coalesce behind one particular candidate. And so they had a vote there, and Tony is going to join us now to tell us a little bit about how that vote went. Tony, welcome to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Hey, Kevin. It's great to be with you this afternoon.
Great. Great to have you. I just made mention of that meeting that took place in Texas. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what took place and what was the outcome?
Sure, be happy to. And let me just preface my remarks by saying I had been selected by the group as the spokesman for the group, and I have been doing so over the last 72 hours. But I personally, our organization, or rather I should say FRC, has not endorsed a candidate and by law cannot endorse a candidate. So I'm speaking on behalf of what the group did. But you are right in the way you set this up, is that there was a concern that what happened in 2008 when social conservative voters were splintered, backing a few different candidates. They actually took what is a larger portion of the pie of voters, which is, you know, in South Carolina, it's pretty large. 55% to 60% of voters in the primary are evangelical. Nationwide, it's somewhere between 40% to 44% in the primaries. That's being divided up, and you allow a moderate to emerge and get the nomination. So there was a desire to see if it was possible to reach some type of agreement to back a single candidate. Mm. There was strong support going into the meeting, as you can imagine, for Rick Perry, who I personally like very much, and I think he is good on most, if not all, the issues, or really all the issues. There's not a single candidate, I think, that at some point in time we have some difference of opinion with. Even when I was in office, there were people, I'm sure, disagreed with me. Mm. But Rick Santorum, same way, great record. And then Newt Gingrich, who also has backing and support in the evangelical community. Any of the three, I think, would be a good candidate. But there was discussion about who best represented and would be willing not to just give support to the issues we care about, but actually do something to dial back the damage that's been done by the present administration to us morally and culturally and economically in this country. And after three rounds of balloting that was followed a number of speeches and presentations, 75% of the group, a supermajority, decided to back Rick Santorum.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a little bit about just the group in general. The Greenville News gave me a call the other day, asked for my opinion on what took place at the meeting and, you know, what sort of impact that it would have. And my take on it was basically that a group like this would have had a tremendous amount of sway years ago. But today, that people get their news and their take the lead from so many different sources, that I'm not sure that it really has the power that it once had to persuade people in a certain direction. Would you agree with that?
I think that is accurate, that it doesn't have the sway that it once had. I think what you have is it's like, you know, when we were growing up, Kevin, I'm sure when there were three major television stations.
Right.
You know, now there are 300. People get information from various sources. I do think, though, that it still is, in fact, 30 years ago, there would have been a room, probably in that room would have been about 10 or 12 people who would have met. This was 150. It shows that the whole movement is decentralized. There were state folks representing different states. You know, there were people who were businessmen who actually put money into campaigns. There were activists, and there were, you know, conservative evangelical leaders and conservative Catholic leaders. And so it doesn't have the impact it once had. It does have an impact, but I think you're accurate in description. Times have changed, and people do rely on different sources for information and direction. But it's still, there are those who look to those that are most plugged in and connected to the process to, you know, get, hey, what are you thinking? What do you think about these candidates? Where do they stand? Who would be best to lead the nation forward? Who casts the best vision for the future? So it does have some impact. Now, whether or not that plays out in South Carolina, you know, we'll see. Mm-hmm. Others have said that, well, it happened too late. It should have happened 3 months ago. It couldn't have happened 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. I'm amazed it happened at all. Mm-hmm. Going into it, I predicted it wouldn't happen. I've never seen the group actually come together with a super majority coming to agreement over one candidate.
Mm-hmm. Now that it has taken place, what do you think, or what has been the impact? We're referring a little bit to the power of an endorsement. It still has power associated with it. I get emails every day from the different campaigns talking about that they just received a new endorsement from somebody else. So it obviously still has some sort of an impact. But what do you see happening here? Because even though the meeting took place, we still have multiple choices.
I don't think that, there was no anticipation that that would change.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't think, I don't think there was any expectation that somebody would get out of the race as a result of that meeting, nor was it seriously discussed or proposed that somebody should get out of the race. Part of what you see happening, as you just described, there's some endorsements that have been coming out as a result of it. There's some activity that actually is kind of below the radar that is being done from political action committees and others that will only manifest itself on Saturday. But Kevin, here's part of the discussion was, all right, let's look at the numbers and there was a good analysis of the numbers in the political landscape. There were some people who came in who were not connected to any campaign that just gave the raw numbers and the expectations of what may occur.
Mm-hmm.
And that was considered. But in the end, I think what carried the day was the idea of, you know what, we social conservatives are oftentimes complaining that we're tired of having to vote between the lesser of two evils. Here we have an opportunity to pick among some candidates who were all pretty good, but to pick someone who truly not just stands with our issues, but has a track record of advocating and advancing the issues. And I think that in the end is where what led the majority of the group to do what they did.
Mm-hmm. Now, that decision came over the weekend, and then on Monday night we had a South Carolina GOP primary debate, and I think by all accounts, many folks are saying that Newt Gingrich really did well in that debate. I've heard of.
I think he's done well in every debate.
Right.
I mean,
That is
one of his strongest suits is, he's great in presenting ideas. He's great in the debates. And I don't think anybody holds a candle to him. And that's clearly part of leadership, but there's more that goes into leadership. And again, I think all of that was weighed by those over the weekend in terms of who they decided to get behind.
Mm-hmm. Somebody, I think, said that they'd like to see Newt Gingrich debate Barack Obama and maybe Rick Santorum then be the president. So they want to morph together a few of these candidates, take some of their strong
points.
That's
really, Kevin, what's so exciting about this. I know it's frustrating for some to say, oh, why can't we just all get together? But in some ways, we're the victim of our own success.
Mm-hmm.
In that we have succeeded in moving the conservative movement, I should say, has succeeded in moving the GOP to a more reflective position of where I think the majority of Americans, or at least the majority of voters, are on these moral and cultural issues. And the ground is so fertile politically that it attracts multiple social conservative candidates. It doesn't attract multiple moderate candidates. There's not room for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens, these social conservatives, slice and dice up the vote, giving the moderate the edge when getting the enough votes to capture the endorsement.
Tony, just a last question. I want to give you an opportunity, not really a question, just the opportunity to tell us a little bit about the Values Voter Bus Tour that the Family Research Council is putting together along with the Heritage Foundation and others, I think. They're coming here to South Carolina. I couldn't get them to drive through Greenville here. It just didn't work with the schedule, but they're going to be, I think, over at the coast. Is that correct?
That's right. We're actually there in Greenville, I think, before Thanksgiving. The bus came through, the Values bus, and I'm headed to South Carolina this afternoon. We'll be in Charleston there to kick off tomorrow morning with the governor, and Ed Fulner from Heritage Foundation will be there, and we'll be kicking off the Values Voter bus. We'll be doing some rallies tomorrow. In fact, we've got a Values Voter rally tomorrow afternoon, which we've invited the candidates to come, and Rick Santorum, I know, will be there. So we're going to be taking that message, and the focus on that is you know, it's your money, it's your values, it's your vote. And these issues of economics, these issues of moral and cultural matters, it's your vote that's going to decide the outcome. And so we're registering people to vote, encouraging them to participate in the process and vote their values.
Well, well said, Tony. I appreciate you taking the time out to bring us up to speed about that meeting of evangelicals and about the Values Voter Bus Tour. I'll give the website here as we go out to break, but I want to thank you for joining with us today on the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Thanks, Kevin. Great to be with you.
Okay, we'll see you. That was Tony Perkins, of course, from FRC. I mentioned that I would give the website there. You can go out to their website and find out more. It's www.frc.org. Easy to remember. That's www.frc.org. You can go out there and find out more about the Family Research Council. We'll be joined here in just a few minutes when we come back from a representative from Personhood USA. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Think you know Mitt? He claims to be pro-life. But here's what he told voters of Massachusetts when he was running for governor.
I will preserve and protect a woman's right to choose, and am devoted and dedicated to honoring my word in that regard. I will not change any provisions of Massachusetts' pro-choice laws. And with regards to this issue of age of consent, it is currently 18 years old. If one wants to have an abortion younger than that, one must have the permission of one parent. And if a parent doesn't go along, one can go to a judge or justice to get that permission.
Huh? He said, what?
If a parent doesn't go along, one can go to a judge or justice to get that permission.
You heard right. Mitt thinks judges should be able to give a minor permission to get an abortion over the objection of her parents.
One can go to a judge to get that permission. One can go to a judge to get that permission. One can go to a judge to get that permission.
Think you know Mitt? Think again. Paid for by Winning Our Future, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Hi, this is R.C. Sproul. Please join us for the 2012 Ligonier Ministries National Conference in Orlando, March 15th to 17th. We'll be focusing on the Christian mind. I'll be joined by Sinclair Ferguson, Robert Godfrey, Michael Horton, Steve Lawson, Al Mohler, Stephen Meyer, R.C. Sproul Jr., and Del Tackett. Call 800-435-4343 or visit Ligonier.org to register. I hope to see you there.
Why is Newt Gingrich on the attack? After two fourth-place finishes, Newt is desperate. Leading conservatives call Gingrich's attacks, quote, foolish and destructive, disgusting and over the top, end quote. Rush Limbaugh compares Newt to left-wing Democrats, saying,
this is not conservatism, it's a polar opposite of conservatism.
Newt is attacking, quote, as harshly as any Democrat, is morphing into an Occupy Wall Street zealot, and shows his, quote, nasty anti-free market self. CNN Money says Newt's allies are intentionally obscuring Mitt Romney's record with, quote, a series of errors taken completely out of context. And Senator Jim DeMint defends Romney, saying,
it really worries me when some Republicans start sounding like Democrats.
Newt has more baggage than the airlines and was fined $300,000 for ethics violations. Don't be fooled by Newt's desperate attacks. Paid for by Restore Our Future, which is responsible for the content of this message, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. RestoreOurFuture.com.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Well, welcome back into this segment of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. It's been a busy day for us so far. Spoke with Newt Gingrich just a few moments ago, and we had him on the interview that I did with him. We just aired a few minutes ago at the top of the broadcast. Right behind Newt then was Tony Perkins from FRC.org, the Family Research Council, and talking to Tony about that meeting of evangelicals in Texas and getting his take on that. And up next, we have a guest from Personhood USA. Personhood USA is having an event tonight at the Hilton Hotel in Greenville, right here in Greenville, 6:45 to 8:30. Unfortunately, I think the reservations have all been taken. There's no more room for anybody to go. And so that's a good thing. But they're having this presidential pro-life forum that's taking place there. And joining me now via the phone is Jennifer Mason. Jennifer is the communication director for Personhood USA. Jennifer, welcome to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Jennifer, I gave a little bit of a blurb there about what Personhood USA is all about. Why don't you give us the correct one?
No, that was great. Actually, Personhood USA is working with a group called Champion the Vote, which really their goal is to get Christians out to vote. And our goal is to get Christians to vote for our Personhood Amendment, so our purposes are aligned there. And really what we've done is we've answered the demand. It seems like the nation wants to know which candidate is pro-life and really pro-life, not just someone who says they're pro-life and doesn't vote pro-life, or says they're pro-life but has a list of exceptions saying that these babies are people, but it's okay to kill them anyway. And so that's what we're looking for tonight. We've put together this great event that we're really excited about, where we are going to be asking tough questions of all the presidential candidates except for Mitt Romney, who declined to participate. And we're just really excited to see their answers and to allow South Carolina voters to have an opportunity to ask these questions.
What's the difference? Help me to understand the difference between the historical pro-life position and now personhood. It seems to be a new term that has come up, and now even a new movement, a new organization. What's the difference?
Well, there are a few differences, and I would have to say that it was born out of frustration from a younger generation that, you know, we feel that abortion was handed to us. You know, we're in our 20s and 30s and 40s and feel that abortion was handed to us, and nothing has been done to stop it. And while we could continue with the status quo of regulating abortion, we've seen that that hasn't been effective and that babies are still dying. So Personhood USA is in this fight to end it. We want to end abortion in America, state by state if we have to, although our ultimate goal is a federal personhood amendment. And that's the difference, I guess. We're really in it to end the fight. We don't want abortion anymore. We don't want to hand abortion off to our children. We want to end it for good. And, you know, that's one of the differences. Although the pro-life movement as a whole in the past has intended to end abortion and has liked the personhood idea, they believe that children in the womb are people, we're just cutting to the chase, I guess you would say, and we're ready to end it now.
You noted, I noted two things about the candidates that are going to be there. One, you mentioned, first of all, that Mitt Romney is not participating, so we have Newt Gingrich, Ron Paul, Rick Perry, and Rick Santorum will be participating in this, and they all have signed the personhood pledge. Is that correct?
That is correct. Mitt Romney was, and John Huntsman, before he dropped out, were the only candidates who declined to sign the pledge.
Okay. And the other candidate that there was a little bit of an issue with was Ron Paul. I remember reading some articles about the fact that Ron Paul had signed the pledge, but kind of with an addendum, that he sent some paperwork along with it, or didn't. There were some questions about, some nuances about what he was willing to say in signing that pledge. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, it was a little bit of a concern for us, and we have to say, too, that this pledge is the first pledge of its kind, and we sent out this pledge basically saying that every human being is a person, and there is no case where abortion is acceptable. It is never okay to intentionally kill a child. And we did not expect that the candidates would sign it. But first, within 20 minutes, Michelle Bachmann had signed and returned the pledge. Shortly after that, Rick Santorum signed and returned the pledge, followed by Newt Gingrich and then Ron Paul. So we were surprised to get such an overwhelming 100% commitment to life from these Republican candidates, which we've never seen this before. So when we got Ron Paul's pledge returned, there was an addendum. Essentially, the pledge says that we believe that in the 14th Amendment, there is a federal right to life. And Ron Paul's addendum, which you can read all of our communications with Ron Paul at personhoodusa.com, but his addendum explained that he believed definitely that life begins at conception. He stood with us that abortion should not be legal, but he disagreed on the 14th Amendment. And he said that while federal law needs to define life, he didn't believe it was the place of the federal government to defend life. And that's kind of where we had we had an issue, because in our perspective, if he believes that the states have the right to outlaw abortion, mm-hmm. and the federal government should not be involved, then it also appears that he would claim that the states have the right to keep abortion legal.
Right.
And then we wonder from there where it goes. If this were an issue of slavery, for example, would he say that states have the right to legalize slavery without mm-hmm. involvement from the federal government?
Mm-hmm.
And our answer to that is, of course, not. The federal government has a responsibility to defend every human life, and that's what we are hoping for from Ron Paul. We haven't really received the clarification we were hoping for on those issues.
Mm-hmm. And so with Ron Paul, if your ultimate objective is a constitutional amendment to personhood, and he doesn't believe in a constitutional amendment to personhood, he believes it's a states' rights issue, why is he speaking at the event?
Well, he did sign the pledge. The event is not just for people who 100% agree with us. It is a pro-life presidential forum, and we did invite Mitt Romney several times, although he didn't sign the pledge. And we do believe that Ron Paul is pro-life in every circumstance. The concern is really an issue of strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And, for example, when you look at again, the issue of slavery, Democrat Stephen Douglas in 1858 said, "I look forward to a time when each state shall be allowed to do as it pleases. If it chooses to keep slavery forever, it is not my business but its own. If it chooses to abolish slavery, it is its own business, not mine." And that seems to be the sentiment that Ron Paul is expressing, but we are not certain of that. We don't know. So we would like to know, and that's what this forum is for.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight we hope to ask these questions of Ron Paul and find out where he really stands on the state's rights to defend their citizens, mm-hmm. or, as we believe, the states never have a right to allow killing of their innocent citizens either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had at one time referred the listeners to the Libertarian website, of which, of course, Ron Paul ran as a Libertarian at one time and is a champion of Libertarian causes, you know. But they basically say on the website, and you can read it for yourself, but they basically say that there's been so much argument about this issue that they don't think we should be involved in it at all. And so I'm a little bit suspect on why his view is not clear. I know that he's personally pro-life. I know he's a doctor, and he's personally pro-life. People have attested to that. But I'm not so sure that I'm not getting a clear signal that he is really willing to, limit it and talk to other people, tell other people that they can't do it and it would be against the law to do it, to commit abortion. So we'll see. It'll be interesting, the questions that are asked there, and see if that gets clarified at all. I'm just unsure how that's going to work out. Jennifer, thank you very much for bringing us up to speed. And I'll give folks your website here so they can go out there and find out more. And maybe being part of the media, I might be able to squeeze in over there tonight. If I do, I'll look for some of the folks over there from Personhood and see if I can talk to them some more.
Great. Yes, that website is personhoodusa.com, and we'd love to have you this evening.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Okay. That was Jennifer Mason from Personhood USA, and you can go out to their website. If you just Google Personhood USA, it'll take you right there to her website, or to their website, I should say. And specifically, they have this presidential profile that we were just talking about. The website for Personhood USA is very simply just www.personhoodusa, that's all one word, .com. Let's switch gears just slightly. We have Lee Jones, and Lee is with World on Campus. She's the editor of the World on Campus website. They do a great job of looking at a number of different issues that are taking place, specifically related to what's taking place on college campuses across the country. Lee's been with us before. So, Lee, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Thanks very much.
Lee, I wanted to talk to you specifically about a couple of court cases. Our program today, we were talking about the idea of government. What does good government look like? And so some of the court cases that you highlight here, I think, fit into that category pretty good. The first one is you wrote out on worldoncampus.com about court watchers looking ahead to Campus Liberty case. Experts, you say, differ over whether this week's Supreme Court decision will have any bearing on a case involving campus ministry groups. Tell us what you're writing about in that particular story.
Well, the case last week, of course, was the Hosanna-Tabor case, which your listeners are probably familiar with, where the Supreme Court said that churches, basically, I'm summarizing obviously here, but that churches should be allowed to make hiring decisions for their ministers without any kind of government interference. It was lauded as a very significant win for freedom of religion. And there's another case that the Supreme Court has not yet agreed to take, but there are high hopes that the court will hear it, hopefully later this year. And it's one we've talked about before. It's Alpha Delta Chi versus Reed. It's coming out of the Ninth Circuit, which involves cases in California. And this is a case involving a sorority and a fraternity at San Diego State University and the school's attempts to prohibit them from requiring their leaders to agree to a statement of faith.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any update for us on the story that was taking place in New York City where the a number of churches were going to not be able to, I guess this doesn't specifically relate to on campus, so I may be putting you on a spot here, but any sort of an update on what was taking place with churches not being able to use public school facilities out of New York City?
Well, I don't have any updates specifically as of today. One of our reporters who is based in New York was attending a press conference that was happening around this midday hour where city officials were going to be talking about this issue, but I have not heard the results of that. So
okay.
I'm afraid I can't give you any updated information there.
That's okay. I know that there's another case that you and I had talked about that there is some updated information on, and that was the case of the Augusta State University student, I think it was Jennifer Keaton. What has taken place in that case? Describe to us what was happening, and then what was the result now, the outcome of that court case?
Sure. Well, Jennifer Keaton was a counseling student at Augusta State University here in Georgia, and she basically was put on probation by school administrators because of some statements she had made about her opposition to homosexuality. And the Alliance Defense Fund is representing her in that case. And they had, in addition, obviously, to filing suit over the overall issue in the case, they had filed a preliminary injunction requesting a judge to stop the school from basically expelling her. And they lost that attempt at the 11th Circuit several weeks ago now. And so that doesn't have any particular bearing on the case itself, but it was, a slight setback for Ms. Keaton, who had hoped to continue on in her studies and get her degree.
Mm. Now, she had actually made a comment on a social website or a social networking site, right, like Facebook or something, and that was what got this whole thing going?
It was that. It was also comments that she had made in class.
Okay.
During a class time discussion, yeah.
So a couple of things. There's something taking place today that you write about or your staff writes about out there on worldoncampus.com. And many of our people in our listening audience may have actually experienced this today and are kind of wondering what in the world is going on. But if I type in here on my laptop, Google, just to go to for a Google search, I come up to a Google page that has a large blacked out area right over the word Google. And not only on that site, but dozens and hundreds of websites around the Internet. Tell us what's going on with this. I think it's referred to as a SOPA protest, standing for Stop Online Privacy Act. But tell us what this involved and what is this protest all about?
Sure. It's the Stop Online Piracy Act, and it's legislation that's proposed in both the House and Senate to try to prevent users of Internet users in the U.S. from accessing pirated content that may be stored on web servers in other countries where U.S. regulators have no jurisdiction. And so this is something that's really being pushed by the music and film industries who have long protested over their pirated copies of movies and songs and what have you being readily available on the Internet. Companies like Google, Wikipedia, Reddit, Craigslist, they're all sort of participating in one form or another in this protest. They claim that the legislation goes too far, that it will actually infringe on free speech rights, and a lot of it has to do with the technical ways that the legislation proposes blocking access to these sites. And, I don't know how much technical detail your listeners would really want, but that's the crux of this. Of this protest.
And so we see it taking place on all those various websites we may go out to. So if you notice that that blackout that's taking place out there, that's what it's related to. I don't think really the press coverage of this was that great, that many people understand what the black line is. You know, there's nothing there that says what they're doing. You just find out a lot of information is just blacked out. They're making a point, of course, but I don't know if everybody understands that. The first time I saw it today, I was like, oh, no, what's wrong with the laptop now?
if you click on that black box on Google, you'll be taken to a page that kind of outlines their opposition to SOPA. And same thing on Wikipedia. If you try to go to the Wikipedia site today in their English language version, you will get a page which talks about, and then they're, of course, urging you to contact your representatives to tell them to oppose the legislation.
Sure. One good story, or you have many out there, but one that I read on worldoncampus.com was the story about a Christian college is now sponsoring an Olympic skier. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, this is Liberty University, which I'm sure most of your listeners are familiar with. They announced last week that they intended to sponsor a freestyle skier in his bid for the Olympics. Of course, most people will be aware that these Olympians are usually sponsored by sports drink companies or clothing manufacturers, people who are more associated with the sport. So it's sort of an unusual move for a college, and then, of course, a Christian college, to choose to sponsor someone and have their name out there associated with something like this. And basically, the skier will have Liberty University all over his gear, and he'll be speaking about the school when he gets an opportunity as he's on tour around the world, participating in these events leading up to qualifications for the Olympics.
I was just going to say that's really interesting that they're looking at that. I wonder if the Tim Tebow story pushed them in that direction a little bit.
Well, I don't know. But they would not say how much money that they were spending on this, but they said that they thought it was a great opportunity to get word out about the school and certainly to spread awareness. And the relationship kind of developed. Jay Panther is the skier's name, and he was at Liberty last fall training at their artificial ski slope. And he had actually been recommended to the school by his pastor, and he's originally from Kentucky. And so as part of his, training there and what have you, he engaged in talks with the university about this. The school wouldn't tell me whether it initiated discussions with him or whether he and his supporters engaged first in the conversation. But either way, he will be bearing Liberty's name on his ski jacket and gear as he competes.
Well, that's interesting. Well, Lee, thank you very much for joining us today and for bringing us up to date on all those stories that we talked about. We really appreciate it, and we appreciate the work that you guys are doing out there at worldoncampus.com.
Thanks, Kevin.
Okay, that was Lee Jones again. You can check out all the stories we talked about on www.worldoncampus.com. Tomorrow we'll be talking about John Calvin in the public square. My guest on the program will be Dr. David Hall, so you don't want to miss out on that. Let me give you one quick announcement here. Did you know that The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe are coming to the Peace Center It's put on by the South Carolina Children's Theater. You can go out to their website, southcarolinachildrenstheater.org, in order to get ticket information. You can also call the Peace Center. It's going to take place here in just less than a month, just a couple weeks away, really, February 3rd through the 12th. Ticket information, you can call 467-3000. That's 467-3000 to find out more about The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which, of course, is that great classic C.S. Lewis tale. Remember this, that the Lord Jesus Christ said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." We'll see you here tomorrow.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.
Life-changing teaching and talk for the Carolinas and Georgia. Christian Talk 660, WLFJ, Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson.